Will next-gen ATC ever work or even be built with Congress micromanaging procurement? I'm Paul Flagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome to the Aero News special feature. Paul Flagg here with Bob Poole, who is the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation. The Reason Foundation advocates for free market solutions to problems rather than government intervention. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners.
Glad to be back, Paul.
Bob, you wrote in the June edition of your ATC Reform News about congressional micromanagement of ATC yet again.
Yes, this is an ongoing problem. Congress in 2000 allowed the FAA to create the Air Traffic Organization to supposedly make the running of the air traffic control into a business-like enterprise, and it now has vice presidents in charge of different programs, and it supposedly has a lot more autonomy. But every time they make big decisions, or even not so big decisions, that have any effect on jobs of employees of FAA, members of Congress intervene. Sometimes they just make a fuss and write a letter. Other times they actually put in legislation to try to stop what the ATO is doing. And the most recent example that I wrote about in the newsletter is ERAM, the En Route Automation Modernization Program. That's a huge program, very, very critical. It's a $2 billion program that Lockheed Martin is a contractor for. It's on time and on budget. It replaces the host computer system that manages the air traffic in the en route environment. So ultimately, it'll be in all 20 centers. And the controversy this time concerned the startup, the switching over to ERAM at the first site, which is the Salt Lake Center. And for some reason, NATCA, the controllers union, was not happy with the final plans for the switchover, and prevailed upon members of the congressional delegation, both senators and all but one House member from Utah, to send a letter to the FAA administrator saying, this looks like it's going to be unstable, and you should not implement it right now. There should be more testing based on what the NATCA people told them. And I'm so frustrated, and I can just imagine how Hank Krakowski, the chief of the ATO, and his people must feel trying to run a thing in a business-like manner, and having every time they turn around, somebody else telling them what they should be doing.
Maybe I'm getting old and cynical, but I remember when the campaign for president was going on last year, mm-hmm. and President Obama was at the time promising reform of the military procurement system. I kind of chuckled because I thought I knew how that might go. The effect that you're talking about is constant in military procurement, where, even when the military agrees we don't need this anymore, congressmen and senators will step in and try to treat it as a job program rather than as a military budget.
Exactly. No, and I you don't. It's not. It's very. It's common in FAA procurement too. I've seen almost never written about by the aviation trade press, but I've had conversations with quite senior people in FAA, some of them still in senior positions, others who have retired from senior positions, and said this kind of micromanagement, they put line items in the facilities and equipment budget, you must buy this piece of equipment. And I've had some of them tell me that some of the stuff sits in warehouses because if they actually installed it, it would be too expensive to operate and they don't really need it.
Well, at some point, you get enough gadgets and it's an issue of floor space.
Right. When you project forward over the next 10 years, as we're implementing all sorts of new technology for next gen, this could really play havoc with the timely and cost-effective implementation of the next gen that everyone in aviation needs, and everyone in aviation, I think, agrees that this is very important. We won't have enough capacity in the system to handle continued growth in aviation without changing the paradigm and expanding the amount of capacity by making it a less labor-intensive system and one that has a lot of routine stuff automated to keep traffic separated and so forth. All of that could be much more costly and much further out, delayed in time, if this kind of congressional micromanagement continues.
More on the problem of non-expert lawmakers telling the technical people how to do their jobs in a moment. I'll be back with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation after this break. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approaches. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset designed for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack talking with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation about the problem of federal lawmakers with no clue about air traffic control other than what they've been fed by NACA, telling the experts how it should be done. Okay, now we're going to wander into a topic that I know is going to raise the neck hairs of guys like Ed Bolin. Your position is that we ought to do this like we did the post office and take this out from the direct ability of Congress to meddle in it.
No, exactly.
And you could only do that if you had something that was the analog of postage stamps priced based on what a postal commission says they should be. And in hushed tones here, we're talking about user fees.
Yes, and user fees can be done in a way that is not devastating to general aviation. I've had this discussion many times with Ed Bolin and with the just recently retired head of AOPA, and they just don't want to hear that. They don't want to have the debate on how. They only want the debate to be on whether, and for them, whether means never.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if you look at Canada, I think, is a good model with NAV Canada. That entity took over all the staff and all the facilities and equipment of the former Transport Canada air traffic control operation. They shifted from airline ticket taxes to direct transaction-based user fees for airlines and for business jets. You know, the high-intensity users of the system that basically always fly IFR and consume a lot of the resources of the air traffic system. For private pilots, you know, general aviation pilots, the kind we normally think of as general aviation, they pay an annual weight-based fee, and that's it. That's what they pay. And they're allowed access. They can file flight plans when they need to, and GA community in Canada is generally pleased with the system. There's been a lot of progress under NAV Canada since it became NAV Canada about 11 years ago. And the head of the Canadian Business Aircraft Association has raved about NAV Canada and what a big improvement it made because it became a business and was not micromanaged and had the resources it needed to do the job.
Well, I think obviously it's not going to happen here for at least a couple of years.
I agree. I'm making no rash predictions.
And I think a lot of the arguments used in fighting the user fee battle are based on the idea that once we start down this slope, a lot of really ugly things could follow.
Ugly things could, Paul, but here's the key. The other piece that makes NAV Canada such a good example is the board of directors is drawn largely from aviation stakeholders, including in the case of NAV Canada Business Aviation, the Canadian Owners and Pilots Association opted not to be part of it, but they were offered a board seat and could have had one. And so certainly if we eventually create something like that in the United States, that would be a nonprofit, probably government corporation, my strong recommendation always has been that the AOPA part of general aviation, the NetJets part, and the corporate jets part should all have board seats, as should the different categories of airlines. This has got to be a joint effort for everyone who actually uses the system to have a say in governance of that system.
Well, if and gotta be are not comforting terms. So I think we'll see this debate raised.
I don't think you would ever get a thing like this through Congress. I mean, it'd be a huge uphill battle to do it in any case. But unless the aviation stakeholders pretty much agreed that this was the right way to go, you wouldn't have a chance anyway.
Okay. Well, and frankly, I'd hope it would work better than the post office because.
Yes, I agree. I think the TVA is probably a little better model. That's not an ideal, but it runs pretty comparable to other investor owned utilities. Mm-hmm. And, Tennessee Valley Authority, major electricity provider. So we do have a few models of government corporations that are self-supporting, that have access to the bond market, which would be another advantage here, that large capital programs, you don't have to fund them on a cash basis, which is the way FAA operates. You could issue revenue bonds, obviously with a revenue source, but procure large systems in an efficient manner in big multi-billion dollar purchases where that makes sense.
And stuff that wouldn't sit in warehouses.
That's exactly. You'd only buy what you needed. But passed a business case for the Board of Aviation Stakeholders.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to go now, Bob, because I'm in the office pool here and I'm going to go get my $2 on the Senator Hatch square that he'll be the one that shoots the blow dart. But
okay.
We really appreciate your often alternative opinion to what we hear within the general aviation community, and thanks for taking some time out for our listeners.
Always glad to do so, Paul.
Bob Poole is the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find out more at www.reason.org. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.